It is Thursday, April 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Cuba has a new president, Miguel Díaz-Canel.
The economy now is relatively stagnant and in grave, grave danger.
The fate of the commander of Eastern Libya's forces remains uncertain, and the Academy of Country Music Awards were distributed in Las Vegas. It's all ahead. Miguel Díaz-Canel has been named Cuba's next president, marking the first time in 60 years the communist-run country has had a president outside the Castro family. State media say the 57-year-old former first vice president, Díaz-Canel, he was the only candidate for the job, won a five-year term. President Raúl Castro relinquished the office of president after 10 years, ending the political role of the Castro brothers as heads of state dating back to the revolution that brought Fidel to power in 1959. But the 86-year-old Raúl Castro will retain the powerful position as head of the Communist Party until at least the year 2021. Peter Hakim, President Emeritus and Senior Fellow at the Washington-based Inter-American Dialogue, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the transition comes at a difficult time for the Caribbean island nation, facing severe economic and political challenges.
Raúl Castro began to propose economic reforms maybe beginning around 10 years ago, had very ambitious goals in creating a private sector, in reforming the monetary system. But in the end, the changes were very minor, and they were swamped by the continuing high degree of regulation, control imposed by the Cuban government. And in effect, the economy now is relatively stagnant and in grave, grave danger because it's lost access to the financing of Venezuela, which was essential to keep the economy going. And U.S. tourism is going to diminish. So the Cuban economy is in grave danger. And the problem is that you try to make reforms at a time when the economy is already in a difficult situation. The costs are just very, very high. The social costs, which turn into political costs.
Díaz-Canel, trained as an electrical engineer, according to a report, embraces technology and appears socially liberal, but is relatively unknown to ordinary Cubans. What do you know of him, if anything?
Well, he apparently was reasonably successful as governor of a Cuban province. He apparently did very, very well in the bureaucracy of Cuba and rose steadily to the senior position of first vice president. The question is, he's relatively unknown. People don't have much confidence that he's going to change anything. And the big question is, how much authority will he really have? What level of legitimacy will he really have? Particularly with Raúl Castro still occupying the powerful positions as head of the Communist Party. So it's going to be very interesting to see how much freedom he has, how much running room he has to create his own sort of policies and agenda, and how much he's controlled by his past and by being looked over by Raúl Castro.
Peter Hakim says he doesn't see any change to the deterioration in the bilateral relationship between Cuba and the United States following President Barack Obama's reestablishing of diplomatic relations with Havana in 2015. Ties have soured as the Trump administration tightened restrictions on travel and business ties to try to bring about greater economic and political reform. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug,
hello,
what's trending?
It's good to be back after a few days of jury duty. Well, while I was away, obviously, the former first lady and the wife of a former president and the mother of another former president, Barbara Bush, passed on at the age of 92. Sounds like she left on her terms. She died in her own home, talking to friends and drinking brandy, which is what she wanted to do. And lots of people still talking about the life and contributions of Barbara Bush. Marshall Ramsey here. Barbara Bush was tough, witty, blunt, protective, and beloved by many, but she also suffered one of the most painful losses a parent can face. I pray that she and her daughter Robin are together again today. Barbara Bush lost her daughter Robin at just the age of 3 years old, many years ago, from leukemia. And it was something that arguably affected her and the entire family from that point on. Here's journalist Victoria Brownsworth. In 1988, I wrote about HIV positive children and babies abandoned at birth and held them at Montefiore in the Bronx. In 1989, Barbara Bush changed the conversation around HIV/AIDS by holding HIV-positive babies at a DC hospice. First ladies can break ground. Barbara Bush did. Of course, that was signaled a somewhat of a different approach between the Bush administration and the Reagan administration, which really never appeared very comfortable even discussing the topic of AIDS. Barbara Bush really took a lot of the sting out of it, I think, with just something as simple as holding children. Here's the History Channel. They're quoting Barbara Bush here. She's famously said, quote, "I married the first man I ever kissed, and when I tell this to my children, they just about throw up." And there's a lot of bad information out there, too, very quickly. I've seen this repeated several times. How many on my Twitter family knows that Barbara Bush was the daughter of Aleister Crowley? Oh, yes, it's a fact. No, it is not. She was not a daughter of Aleister Crowley. So get that out of your mind. A bit of a Twitter eruption. A Fresno State professor, Rhonda Girard, has tweeted out and has continued to tweet out similar things. She wrote yesterday, "Barbara Bush as a generous and smart and amazing racist who, along with her husband, raised a war criminal." And, of course, that's got a lot of people's hackles up. I'll just end with this one. Somebody who calls himself Barrister Banter. He follows legal proceedings. Again, quoting Barbara Bush, "At the end of your life, you will never forget not having passed one more test, not winning one more verdict, or not closing one more deal. You will regret time not spent with a husband, a friend, a child, or a parent." So, people talking and remembering the former First Lady, Barbara Bush.
Yes, very much. Thank you, Doug. That's social media editor, Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The United States says there's no indication Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is prepared to launch another chemical attack. Russia demands compensation for U.S. tariffs on aluminum and steel. South Korea's president says North Korea is not imposing conditions on next week's nuclear talks. And Pakistan confirms new U.S. restrictions on diplomats. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Some 4.5 billion years ago, our sun was born among a cluster of thousands of other stars. Now, Australian and European astronomers are trying to find our sun's long-lost solar siblings, which are scattered throughout our galaxy. To do so, the scientists examine the chemical profiles of 350,000 stars in the Milky Way as though they were mapping each star's DNA. The mapping is part of an ongoing survey called GALA, or Galactic Archaeology with Hermes, which began in 2013. Hermes is the name of the spectrograph that's being used to determine the star's chemical makeup. Sarah Martell from the University of New South Wales, Sydney, who leads the GALA survey observations, explains that when they are found, every star in the sun's original birth cluster will have the very same chemical composition as our own sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps helps promote water conservation for Earth Day. The second in command of Eastern Libyan forces says he survived a car bomb attack against his motorcade in the eastern capital, Benghazi. The attack comes amid uncertainty about the health of the top Eastern Libya commander, General Khalifa Haftar, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Saudi news channel Al-Ikhbariya showed video of the site of the attack against General Abdulrazak Nazuri's vehicle in Benghazi. Nazuri, the number two commander for the Eastern Libya forces, told Arab media he escaped the car bomb unscathed and there were no casualties. He added his troops continue military operations against Islamic militants in the eastern coastal city of Darna. Speculation continues to swirl over the fate of Nazuri's boss, Army Commander General Khalifa Haftar, who is reportedly in a Paris hospital. Libyan media reported the general was transferred from his headquarters in eastern Libya to Jordan about a week ago, then flown to France for treatment. His military spokesman denies Haftar has any serious health issues. Nazuri also says Haftar is expected to return from abroad shortly. Governing Council member Abdelkader al-Khawaili serves under internationally recognized Libyan Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj. Al-Khawaili tells Arab media he thinks there is a struggle for succession inside the military forces loyal to Haftar now that his health is deteriorating. Eastern Libyan political and military leaders have denied such reports. University of Paris professor Khatar Abu Diab tells VOA the uncertainty about Haftar has added confusion to the political and military situation in eastern Libya. He says the attack against Haftar's top commander looks like an effort by Islamist forces in Tripoli to regain control over the east of the country. That, he stresses, is a serious blow to the battle against terrorism in the east of the country and threatens the security of Libya's large eastern neighbor, Egypt. Haftar's forces are battling militants in Darna, which is close to the Egyptian border. Cairo, which launched airstrikes against Darna several years ago, complains militants there use the town as a stepping stone for attacking Egypt. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The most decorated Olympian of all time, swimmer Michael Phelps, no longer competes, but he's never far from water. As Earth Day celebrations get underway, Phelps talks to VOA News about water conservation and what he does at home to preserve the precious resource. Tina Tren reports.
Michael Phelps is a multitasker.
Even for me, like in the morning, like when I do take a shower, I'm brushing my teeth in the shower.
The most decorated Olympian in history knows a thing or two about saving time. But these days, he's all about saving water.
Water has been such a big part of my life, an important part of my life. And you know, for me, it's an honor and a pleasure to be able to spread the word that we need to conserve as much as we can.
Phelps has partnered with Colgate to promote water conservation through simple everyday techniques like turning off the tap while brushing your teeth.
Did you know that leaving the faucet on while brushing your teeth can waste up to 4 gallons of water? So please turn the faucet off next time you brush.
4 gallons of water. It's like 64 glasses of water. So, I mean, that right there should be enough where, you know, you can make that change and cut back on your showers or make sure you're turning off the water.
With Earth Day around the corner, Colgate has created a water-activated drain sticker to remind users to conserve. Consumers can also take an online pledge to save water. With 71% of the world's population experiencing moderate to severe water scarcity at least 1 month out of the year, Phelps says small efforts like this can have a global impact.
It's so easy that everybody can do it. So, I mean, I think that's a big, easy step that we can all take, every single one of us.
These days, the father of two is also thinking about future generations.
Being able to have a two-year-old now, he's kind of picking up on every little small thing that we do. So it's fun to teach them things like this early in their life, because then it allows them to be able to carry it through their life, but also teach other people the importance of conserving water.
It's just one of many lessons the versatile athlete is passing on.
I always have dream, plan, reach. That's my motto. Have a dream, figure out a plan how to get there, and reach for it. If you fall short, go back to the drawing board, figure out a different plan, and try to get there. I mean, anything is possible, and I believe that. You know, I think there were so many people that doubted the things that I was doing. But I believed that I could do it, and I wasn't going to stop until I got it done.
Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
One of the biggest nights in country music happened this week, the Academy of Country Music Awards. The ceremony features some of the biggest names and emerging talent in country music. Nikki Strong of VOA Music will tell us who won what and what were some of the night's best moments. So, Nikki, who were the big winners of the evening?
There were about three acts that won multiple awards. Miranda Lambert won for Best Female Vocalist of the Year and Song of the Year for Tin Man. And I have to tell you, it had to be very interesting. I'll use the word interesting because Tin Man is about Blake Shelton breaking her heart. And he was in the audience with Gwen Stefani. There were no cutaways of Gwen Stefani and Blake's reaction as she gave her acceptance speech. I think if there were cutaways, it probably would have been a moment that went viral. But as a result of winning these two awards, Miranda made history as the artist who has won the most ACM. So I think in total, maybe around 30. It was a huge night for Chris Stapleton, too. He won for Best Album of the Year for From a Room Volume 1, as well as Best Male Vocalist of the Year. No surprise there, but he was a no-show. Why? Because he was at the hospital with his wife. She gave twins that evening during the show.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing? And on top of that, it was his birthday.
What a celebration they must be having.
I know. So that was amazing. Brothers Osborne won for Best Vocal Duo of the Year and Best Video for their song It Ain't My Fault. And the timing of their win is great because their new album, Port St. Joe, drops this week. And then finally, the coveted Entertainer of the Year was won by Jason Aldean, which is very symbolic since he is the one that was literally on stage when gunfire broke out at the Route 91 mass shooting in Las Vegas at the Country Festival. So, and the awards, the ceremony itself took place in Las Vegas. So it was like a full circle sort of triumphant experience for him to win, as well as for the survivors in their like collective road to recovery.
Did they do a tribute to the victims of the Route 91 mass shooting?
You know, not really. They did an acknowledgement for the most part in the beginning of the show, and then they moved on. They didn't even do an in memoriam segment acknowledging like country artists who passed away, which is really unusual for a country show. I don't know why they decided not to, but they didn't.
What were some of the best moments?
Well, I say Reba, 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 Reba. This year's ACMs was her 15th year doing it.
Oh.
And she is funny. She's natural. She's engaging. She's quick-witted. She had several zingers. One of them that frequently gets quoted is she was making reference to the fact that the previous years recently have been co-hosted by country male stars. And she says something like, I guess they realize that it only takes one woman to do the job of two men. She also wore the dress that she wore like over 20 years ago when she hosted, and she looked great in it. So bless her body.
Yes,
bless her heart. And her duet with Kelly Clarkson was outstanding as well. Another moment was Carrie Underwood's performance. Now, this was, you know, slated as her triumphant return, you know, since her fall, and she had to get stitches on her face. So after all the hype about her possibly looking different, she looked beautiful, she looked the same, but her performance was amazing, and it warranted a standing ovation. Everybody stood up. I was blown away. And then shortly afterwards, she won for Best Vocal Event of the Year for her performance she did with Keith Urban called The Fighter, that song. But I thought that performance that she just did of Cry Pretty was worthy of the award in itself. She was great.
You can hear music from all the winners on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter and Facebook at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
I'm the keeper of the
Well, Miranda Lambert brings us to the end of the show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
70 years ago this month, the United States implemented the European Recovery Program, better known as the Marshall Plan, in an effort to stabilize war-shattered Europe and help it restore its industrial and agricultural production. Between April 1948 and December 1951, the United States poured $13 billion in direct investment into 17 Western European countries, including former foes Germany and Italy. In today's money, that's around $130 billion. It was one of the most successful U.S. foreign policy moves of the 20th century. The Marshall Plan, named after then-Secretary of State George Marshall, was even more remarkable when viewed in the context of what took place after other wars, said Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs Wes Mitchell at the Marshall Plan's 70th anniversary commemoration. In most of history's previous wars, the victor had sought to either extinguish the vanquished or to restore its own national strength by drawing upon the resources of the conquered.
Rather than punishing our enemies or retreating from Europe's problems, as we had done in 1918, America's leaders chose to remain in Europe and to use our great national wealth to nourish and rebuild its shattered societies. As Secretary Marshall said in 1947, the United States would, quote, do whatever it is able to do to assist in the return of normal economic health in the world, without which there can be no political stability or assured peace.
After 1945, the task was one of creation, to forge new relationships and to bring to fruition a new reality that could not have previously been imagined. Today, our task is preservation, to rally and conserve the West as a realm of ordered liberty against threats that few could have dreamed possible in the heady days after the fall of communism, said Assistant Secretary Mitchell. Commemorations are important for reminding both sides of the Atlantic that Allied cohesion is of inestimable value, but also that it requires sacrifice to maintain. Our grandparents' generation grasped that fact after the Second World War. It is up to us to ensure that the peace and prosperity they helped to broker, and from which we have benefited in our lifetimes, is extended to future generations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.